Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, August the 29th, 1995. In the fireside room this morning, our speaker is Don Johnson. His subject, Living Water, a Pattern for Baptismal Journeys Today. Let's listen in.
I'm talking about a process which we use and are beginning to use within the life of our church in Canada. It is not something that we use uniquely. There are Lutheran parishes in the United States who are doing this as well. Most of these Lutheran parishes have borrowed from the Episcopalians because they are well into their program of adult catechumenate. And the Lutheran Church, ELCA, has not yet chosen to work hard on this project. But individuals in that church have worked hard on it and have tried to encourage the church to adopt a program. So we are in the beginning of our journey of using the adult catechumenate. And I have to tell you that we, right from the beginning, said that we would never say, well, now we've got a program and this is it. But rather I said to the people who were working with me on the project that we must be dedicated to work with this for at least 10 years. And we must be flexible and allow change to come about. Because it is really only through the experience of the project and of bringing people to baptism through this process that we really will learn. It's not something you can only learn in your head. It also is something that you need to learn within a kind of process. So we said right from the beginning that what we need to do is that we need to maintain a network of parishes and people who are using the process so that we can get feedback from them, so that we can continue to learn. We have some rites that we have introduced to the church, but we have said all of these rites are only provisional. The bishops of the church wanted us to adopt them as rites within the church, and we said, no, that will put them in stone. And maybe we need to revise the rites as time goes on. Maybe we'll discover something new. And there are some things which we know we do, which others do not do, and vice versa, which we need to continue to work on. So my coming to Holden is not to come as a person who knows everything about this. I'm only myself a beginner, even though I've worked with the project. I worked with adult catechumenate 3 years in my parish, and I've been working on this project within the National Church for a 5-year period. So please understand that the things that I also say are in some ways provisional. And the process which we have devised is certainly in some ways provisional. So what I wanted to do this morning is to tell you a little bit about what this means for us and where we are right now in terms of this process, and to have you share some of that process with me, and for you to ask questions at any time. I'm not going to, you know, lecture for 25 minutes and then get feedback from you. I think that maybe I would rather that you just sort of interrupt at any time and say, hey, I don't understand this, or tell me a little bit more about that. Or, hey, I've got some deep questions about this. Or, I mean, there's enough of a few of us here, so I hope you feel comfortable doing that. So let me begin by telling you about the personnel that we use, the people that we use, and their particular roles in the adult catechumenate process. And then I'll tell you about the process itself. In our process, we decided that we needed to keep it simple because we have, in the Canadian church, lots of small congregations. And in when one looks at what the Episcopalians have done, I mean, it's wonderful, but most of their adult catechumens is held within the context of large cathedrals. And they have lots of personnel, and so they have lots of jobs for lots of people. And the Roman Catholic Church in Canada also has had lots of people to do their work, and because they have large parishes and large adult catechumenate groups then because of that. But we said, no, we need to have it so that a small parish in a rural area could also use something of the process and could feel adequately served by something of the process. So we tried to keep the number of people to a minimum in terms of this process. So we said an adult catechumenate team is pastor, catechist, coordinator, and sponsors. So let me tell you a little bit about each of those roles, because I think this is a team. What's really good about it for me as a pastor is that all of a sudden, at least with my baptismal ministry with adults, I know that I'm working with a team of people. Now that was a little hard for me to learn, because I'm accustomed to working alone. It used to be my total responsibility to bring adults to baptism, have a pastor's class, all of that kind of stuff. Now I have to share this. And to some extent, it's difficult to do that, even though I recognize the enormous value of being a part of a team within parish life, rather than to have to be the head honcho all the time and do all the stuff. So I play an important role in this. I play an important role in getting to know all of the candidates. I play an important role in the team. I play an important role also because I bring a kind of a skilled theological perspective to the team. But I must not let that be the overbearing thing. I also play an important role in that it is my responsibility as the leader of worship to do the rites and also to encourage the rest of the congregation to be involved in prayer for the team and for the candidates. It is also my responsibility as the pastor to hold the team and the candidates within my own prayer life. One of the things I think that is of such value to the whole process is that suddenly this process is accompanied by much prayer. Prayer from the congregation. Each of the team members are asked to pray on a regular basis for one another and for the candidates. And I am the one who is to call them to do this. I also work closely with the catechist. And I'll tell you a little bit about his role, or her role. The catechist is the one who runs the meetings of the adult catechumenate group and their sponsors. And they meet weekly in the parish. Sometimes they meet more than weekly. In our parish, they meet on Sunday mornings after the Sunday morning worship service, and they meet for about an hour. We said that we also need to kind of get a hold of people on a more extended period of time, so that once a month during the process, I don't meet with that group, but once a month, I meet with the total group, candidates and the whole of the group. And we have supper together, we pray together, and then we're kind of in an open forum in which people can continue to ask any questions that they want, or there may be a decision may be made that maybe I would do some teaching on a particular aspect of the Christian life. So I also do some teaching, but most of my teaching is done through the catechist. The catechist is a person who meets with the group, leads the group, and also then tries to stimulate the group. So he's more of a catalyst than a teacher. He needs to be somewhat aware of the Christian faith and have some understanding of the scriptures. She needs to be a person that is open and ready to listen to the candidates and to say, what is it that is arising out of your life, and how does that connect to either the lesson for the day or to some of the teaching of both the testaments in the church? So the catechist, I think, doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a trained theological person. Catechist is often, in my parish, is a lay person. But someone who has been actively involved in the life of the church, I think done a little bit of reading in terms of the Christian faith, but particularly one who is then open to other people. That's the catechist. We also have a person called the coordinator. And the coordinator is the one who tries to make sure that all of the meetings take place, that the candidates are fully aware of the process. And if there are retreats which we may go on, it is the coordinator who organizes some of those retreats, make sure that the candidates are able to come, make sure that when there is a rite in the church, then everybody knows what the rite is and what their own expectation is in terms of the rite of the church. The coordinator also then encourages the sponsors so that if people miss on a Sunday morning, which of course they do at times, that the sponsor is always there saying, calling and saying, hey, we missed you this morning. Here are some of the things we talked about. And encouraging then that relationship between the sponsor and the candidate. Each candidate is assigned a sponsor. I think that the role of the sponsor is, again, one who will journey with and walk with. I think that we've had too much emphasis on education in our church and not enough emphasis on experience. So sometimes I think that a good sponsor may not be one who is theologically skilled, but a good sponsor is someone who knows the Lord and who has journeyed with God and is able in some ways to talk about that journey. A good sponsor needs to also be open and listening, because what we are trying to do always is to discern the action of God and how God touches the heart of the candidate. And if you are a sponsor and you're only willing to tell what your experience is, well then, heaven help us, because that's not what a candidate means. The sponsors attend all of the meetings, attend all of the sessions. The sponsor is invited to pray for the candidate and with the candidate as that becomes appropriate. The sponsor is invited to keep in touch with the candidate on a weekly basis. So we try to make a match then between sponsors and candidates, so that those people will have some kind of relationship with one another. Because we know that over an 8 or 9 month period, this can develop into just a wonderful relationship. And so we're a little bit careful about this, about who we choose for what person to be a sponsor. We also allow the candidate to have some choice in this, because if they know some of the people in the congregation, then they might say, hey, I don't get along with that person as well. I don't feel as comfortable. I feel more comfortable with this person. And we say, that's an important ingredient. It has never happened to us yet that we've had to change sponsors. But I think at some time that may happen, that candidates may say, hey, this isn't working.
Our sponsors may even say, hey, I'm not getting along. We need to change this in midstream. And I think we need to be flexible to do that and not to kind of feel, well, you have to grind it out even though it's not working for you. Then there's the whole congregation. In my parish, I think that this is a growing concept, that the congregation is there to pray for the candidates and to support them. I think that for the first couple of years, there was a kind of curiosity about it. And even though I invited them to pray on a regular basis, and even though on the prayers on Sunday morning I would include all of the candidates regularly, not every Sunday, but regularly, in the prayers of the church, I think there was a kind of a sense that, oh, well, that's happened to them, and isn't that interesting? Rather than, no, this is a community of people, and we are a part of them in some ways. At least in my parish, that sort of sense of community and of being a community is something that we all long for, but something which we have not been completely able to achieve. And there's sort of a, we're kind of got one foot in community and one foot into privatization, and so it's a kind of a struggle always. But I see that there are more and more people as time goes on, at least in my parish, and in other parishes as well, more and more people who understand that the congregation is playing such an important part in this candidate's life. An important part in worship on Sunday morning, an important part in prayer, and also an important part in witness. So finally, there are some people who go around and also talk to the candidates, for example, even on Sunday mornings, and say, hey, how's it going? And I'm glad you're doing this, and I will pray for you, and have conversation. Members of the congregation may also be invited from time to time to come into the group meeting. For example, if there's someone who's very concerned about social action issues, and it seems appropriate at that particular point for the candidates to discuss together their own understanding of the gospel and its relationship to society, then some of those people are the resource people for the candidates. People interested in worship may come talk to the candidates about the liturgical year and about why we worship and how this really goes within the Lutheran tradition. So it's not just the team. I think there are resources in the parish that also will be used. So this is it. A team of people with a pastor, a catechist, a coordinator, and then sponsors. When I first started, I went to people and I said, to a few individuals, and I said, what would you rather do? Would you rather be a sponsor who would help someone in their spiritual life, or would you rather be on the finance committee? I think, it's my impression at least, that people in the church, although they're very frightened about getting close and having something to do with spiritual formation, that to some extent they're longing for that. And that we have to give people an opportunity to begin to do that. I think people are longing in the church. I mean, they're tired in some ways of committees. Committees which sometimes don't really touch people. Committees which kind of run organizational things, but don't really get to the nitty-gritty of interpersonal relationships and even to the nitty-gritty of our relationship to God. So I'm quite convinced, and was convinced in my parish, that I would have no trouble finding sponsors. Even though this meant for them, I mean, this is a strenuous journey for them and for all of the team.
weekly meeting, weekly coming to church. I mean, a dedication. I mean, like every Christian ought to be doing that anyway, but they are to be there. And then meeting with the group. And then going off on one or two retreats with the candidates. I mean, it's a heavy agenda and great expectation. And then, besides all of that, we say, keep in touch with your candidate, either by phone, or invite them over to your house for a meal on occasion, or meet for coffee someplace. Keep in touch with this person. So there is a kind of expectation that there's going to have to be some time devoted to it. Are those kind of roles understandable in terms of what each one of those people would do and how they might function a little bit differently and how helpful it would be to have each one of those kinds of people?
You know, you say it's a small group, and in a way it is, but I can see even in a medium-sized congregation that it takes a big commitment from the whole congregation, from the pastor, and I mean, to set up any new particular effort. And I'm not saying it's not doable at all, but you know, it's scaled down, and yet it's still.
Oh no, and I don't want to say now this is easy, and I don't think that any parish should just jump right into it.
Yeah.
I think that this is something that needs to be discussed all through the parish, eh? Needs to be discussed certainly by the church council as a possibility. Needs to be discussed with other people. People need to talk about it. And even if you don't have candidates for baptism, perhaps you can find candidates for affirmation of baptism. Candidates who will then themselves become sponsors. Maybe they have to go through the process themselves in order to really understand and therefore be able to be a good sponsor to other people. So I kind of say, hey, we need to get started on whatever level we can. But it seems to me that what we need to do is a good educational process and not just sort of plunk it in and say, well, here's the latest things in sliced toast, and this is going to save the church. But rather we need the cooperation and the understanding of everybody. So I think that there's lots of work to be done in terms of preparing a community for this.
What are your thoughts on reaffirmation of baptism and how might a person evaluate their need for that? To me, it seems that this program is so rich in possibilities and for renewal. And could it apply or could it be a part of reaffirmation?
Right.
And certainly, you know, people who have been through infant baptism and confirmation in early teens, and then for whatever reasons leave the church and come back, and you know that would be very obvious. But what about me? People who have been in the church all along,
sure.
But who feel so called to this.
Right. Well, let me tell you a little bit about some of the people who have been candidates in my parish. There was a woman whose name was Shelley. She's a single mom. And she had been outside the church for a while, came back with her daughter, and became active in the life of the church. She came to see me. I also work as a spiritual director for people who want, and she came to see me to talk about her own kind of lack of sense of spirituality. She had difficulty praying. She liked the church and liked the community, but somehow felt as though her own faith was sluggish. So I saw her. And then I suggested that she also not only continue to see me as a spiritual director, but that she also join the adult catechumenate program. So here's a person who's active in the church and who was a candidate. Or there is another woman who was I mean, she's been, I mean, she's one of these wonderful workers in the church. You'd ask her to do anything. And then one day she came to me and said, you know, I'm doing all this stuff in the church, but the truth of the matter is, I don't really know much about the faith. And so she became a candidate for adult catechumenate. I think that there are lots of people who I think will, even though they're very active in the church, will find this process really valuable for them. And that we ought not to think only of the people who have been on the outside and then are coming back in, but we also have to think about those who are on the inside. And if we're going to have a long run at this, and if we are going to be evangelists for the world, we're going to need more and more people who are prepared.
And somehow, I think, to be able to have something to offer after this program has been completed,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we don't go back to church work.
In the same way, right.
In the same way.
No,
yeah.
No, no. No, that's yeah. Right. I think that for many people, I mean, you know as well as I do that there are many Lutherans who have very deep faith but are very poor at articulation of anything about their faith. They're very poor talkers. They kind of grew up in a church system that said, I got to make sure I say the right thing. And I'm not sure if I'm saying the right thing, so I'll shut up. And they remain silent. They remain silent at work. They remain silent in their families because they're not sure. We need to encourage people within the group of safety to begin to talk about their own faith and life and to see and to talk about their own relationship to the Lord. There are many ways to do this. But one of the ways in which this can take place is indeed through the adult catechumenate. Not only because you come into a group where you're invited to talk, but also because you have a sponsor and a mentor, a person with which the prime thing is for those people to get to know one another and to begin to talk about their common life in Christ and what that means for them. So I say that there could be many people in our parishes who would find a great deal of value in this program and in this process. Yep.
Does that tie into the last two numbers there, the call to mission, dedicated to a mission, or just what does that refer to? Wouldn't that refer to putting the faith into practice?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let me go to the process then, and you can kind of see what the process does and how that is followed through. Like the early church, they said that there is a kind of a staging, not a hoop to jump through, but there is a kind of a way in which faith can grow and develop. And so the early church had a sort of sense of it needing to be a period of time for this to take place. So they saw, and we see also, the first stage and the first thing in terms of people's lives is that they are inquirers. Maybe asking some of the same questions that you're asking, like, is it really for me or not? I mean, that's an inquiry question, I think. Or people who've been brought into the church for whatever reason, who have not been baptized, asking questions about their own baptismal life. Inquiry does not only take place within the structure of a group. Inquiry also takes place on a one-to-one basis between pastor and people, or inquiry takes place between lay people and lay people. I have recognized that in this society, I, as a male pastor, have some limitations. There are some people who cannot relate to me. They cannot relate to me because I'm of certain personality type. They cannot relate to me, often women cannot relate to me because they've had some bad experiences with men in their life and they don't trust men. And so the inquiry needs to take, I mean, we need to think about this inquiry as being more than just and coming in to see the pastor, but this needs to be also a kind of a something in which other people are also involved. An inquirer will also be invited to join the group on Sunday morning or whenever they meet and to say, hey, we know that you're not, that we know that you're just experimenting as to whether you want to be a part of this or not. But you need to come and you need to ask your questions, you need to get the feel of everything, and then you need to kind of make a decision. I know, and you know probably, that it's our Lutheran churches are not the most fast-growing churches in the world. We have to go to Africa in order to find the fast-growing churches. Just this morning, I was talking to Schrader, and he was telling me about the church in Ethiopia, which has 200 pastors and 2 million people, and is growing by about 100,000 a year. We know very well that if that kind of growth takes place, there's just a whole pack of other people who are doing the work. It certainly isn't the pastors. There's just a lot of other people who are doing that and are in their daily life providing an opportunity for people to talk about their religious experience. We as Lutherans are hesitant. So we need inquiry also begins. Outreach begins by people who are open and inviting in their own work and so on in bringing others to the church. Don't have a lot of them, but we're growing. I mean, our understanding of this is growing, at least in my parish. And people are beginning to do this, and we're finding it kind of exciting about the new people that are coming by. So that first stage is inquiry. And finally, the person says, yes, I would like to be a candidate in the adult, no, I would like to join the adult catechumenate group. Joining the adult catechumenate group right here is a time in which they are brought before the congregation. And for those of you who were at worship the other night when Joe came, that is the service that would be used, with the candidate or with the sponsor presenting the candidate being welcomed by the congregation, and the sign of the cross being put on all parts of the body as a kind of a sign of what this journey involves. Namely, to be baptized into Jesus is to give one whole self into the death and burial of Christ. So the sign of the cross placed on the forehead and on the brain and in the eyes and in the ears and on the mouth and on the heart and on the shoulders and on the hands and on the feet. Then begins the kind of stuff which I call the program of the adult catechumenate. And for the most part, it is centered only in the scriptures. And people gather together to listen to the scriptures, namely the lectionaries that happen on Sunday morning. And people gather together to say, well, what does this scripture mean for me? Some of them, all of them, have probably been at church in our parish. They've been at church. They've listened to the sermon. They've listened to the reading of the scriptures. And now they take those scriptures and they begin to work with those scriptures.
Interrupt here for a second. I'm envisioning right now a family that's come. They said we decided this is an important thing for our life. So you have maybe a husband and a wife, and you have some school-aged children. What's happening with the children at this time?
In In our church, I mean, there's a whole educational program that takes place so that the family is able to go, and then the other children are being cared for either in a nursery or in some other kind of way.
I don't mean physically. I mean in terms of if maybe the children are going to be baptized too.
Oh, right.
I'm talking about instruction of any kind or...
I provide myself some instruction for the children, and we ask the parents as they grow in faith to provide instruction for their children so that they would also then talk to their own children about this. But it is so that I don't think that the children are to be included in the process. I think the children are included in a variety of other ways. And then the family needs to be encouraged to include the children in their kind of daily life, and in their daily prayer life, and in their daily life with the children. I think that that's a little bit different journey for the children.
We're working with a Sunday school curriculum that also follows the lectionary, so I'm thinking, in some ways, you know, if you could actually encourage, because if the kids are in Sunday school, they've heard those lessons too that Sunday.
Yeah.
If you're working with those lessons, that there would be a way that you could encourage dialogue within the family, appropriate parts of that to the kids.
That's wonderful, and we do the same thing. We have a similar program in our church, where Sunday school is based on the lectionary, and of course that's what's encouraged, that the parents should go home, and because they've heard the lectionary, they should be able to talk to the children about it. And well, I don't know how many of the parents really do this.
It might be informal, but I think at least it's a much greater possibility if you have both generations are looking at the same things on the same day.
I get a picture that the adults and the catechumen meet at a different time than Sunday school. How does your morning schedule?
Oh, well, in our parish, we have church in the morning at 10, then we have the education hour for adults, and we have education hour for children, and the adult catechumen meets during that time, right? So that's a kind of simple solution for us, and because our parish is spread out over a whole area, long space of distance, it's easier to make use of that time than to invite people to come back all the time. So that's why we do it, and then we have this kind of midweek gathering thing, which takes place. It is then enhanced for us during Lent. We do even more than that during Lent. So let me just show you what this might mean. I mean, let me read to you a text. Oh, I don't have a lot of time. I was thinking about Jesus healing the crippled woman. On the Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in the synagogue. A woman there had an evil spirit that kept her sick for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called out to her, "Woman, you are free from your sickness." He placed his hand on her, and at once she straightened herself up and praised God. So the questions that would be raised are, who's bent over? Is this only a physical thing for us? What is the brokenness in our own lives that we experience, and the healing that we long for? What is the brokenness that we see in others, for whom we also long for healing? Can we trust that Jesus also is the healer who is at work within the life of the church today? Is Jesus that close? What is this evil spirit stuff? Do we experience the presence of evil in people's lives and in our lives? You can see that there is opportunity for lots of discussion. I think that, that's the most surprising thing is that, and the most radical thing is that the Bible is the chief thing. It's what you use. It's the Bible and prayer and discussion and walking together that is the chief thing. I love the story of the people, the man and the woman on the road to Emmaus. A husband and wife, I think, who were coming back after all this death and resurrection kind of stuff. And they were talking together. And in the midst of them, Jesus was present. And isn't it wonderful for us to think about how it is possible that when two people take a journey together, that the Lord is also present with us to help us, to guide us, to lead us, and to touch us. And surely that resurrection story is present as a kind of reminder to us about the closeness of the resurrected Christ in the life of the church. We know that that's a reality. Sometimes we are not open to that reality of Christ being that close in our lives. How long will it take a candidate to come to the place where they begin to see that Christ revealed in the Old and in the New Testament, that Christ who also walks as closely as that to them, with them? So you can see that there's just enormous possibilities always for discussion within the candidates, the sponsors, and the leadership of that community. It always begins with prayer. It also includes reading of scriptures. Sometimes we don't even allow people to take the scriptures. We just say, use your ears, hear what you have. Don't get hung up on words. Think about concepts. Think about your own life in relationship to this particular point of scripture. You can see also that each passage in scripture also presents some opportunity for some teaching kinds of things. And this one particularly raises the question about exorcism and so on in our life today. It's a topic we don't talk much about, but it's there. When the candidates are ready, and we suggest the first Sunday of Lent, they then announce, or the adult catechumenate are ready, they announce to the congregation that they're planned to be baptized at Easter Eve. So they are again brought before the congregation and this announcement is made. This announcement is made for those who are ready, either to affirm their faith or to be baptized at the Easter Vigil service. So there is a public announcement that at such and such a time these people will be baptized. They write their names into a book. We call it in our church the Book of Life. And each of the candidates signs the book. They are a candidate for baptism. And then we ask them at that particular time not only to continue the kind of weekly meetings, but also to become more involved in their own personal prayer life. And we have just finished the publication of this book that I wrote, which is called, whoops, is it here? Praying the Catechism. And we give each of the candidates a copy of this book. I mean, while we were doing the first, as I had drawn it up on mimeograph form or in a Xerox copies and so on, and we used it as for the candidates, and then I rewrote some stuff as they give feedback, etc. This book, then, is the prayer book that we ask them to use for 90 days, starting on the first Sunday of Lent, and then continuing on to Pentecost. So now there's daily prayer, focused on the catechism, and some discussion about each parts of the catechism, there is the Sunday meetings, and we invite them also come to midweek Lenten services. And after midweek Lenten services, there is also discussion. And the discussion on midweek Lenten services focuses on the catechism, and the discussion in the mornings continues to focus on the lectionary. Because we say this is an intensified time, eh? That you are getting ready. You have announced. You are now, the intensity is coming. And so the questions always are, what is it that I need to put off, and what is it that I need to take on? What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? What do I have to leave behind? What is it that God wants me to take on in my life? They are also brought before the congregation on the second Sunday of Lent and on the fifth Sunday of Lent. During the second Sunday of Lent, they are brought, we give every candidate a copy of the worship book of the church. So everybody in our church gets LBW, which we call the prayer book of the church. I'm quite convinced that most people do not see LBW as the prayer book of the church, even though it is. I mean, it has just enormous amount of prayers included in it, and ways to pray included in it. But people only use it as a resource for worship, not a resource for prayer. They are again brought forward to the congregation and blessed and prayed for. Then on the fifth Sunday of Lent, they are asked to come forward again. And we particularly, because they are going to be affirming the faith of the creed, the baptismal creed of the Apostles' Creed, we then give them out copies of the creed. And there is some sense about them being then prepared to say this creed with the congregation. They have already been going through the creed and have gone through it in terms of praying the catechism, so that they know more about it and there's been discussion on it. So it's more than just a matter of handing somebody a sheet and saying, here's the creed, confess the faith. It needs to be integrated in their lives. And they are again brought forward. At this particular time, we invite people also then to speak to the congregation about their own desire for baptism or affirmation of baptism. But it's not a must, because you know some people aren't able to do that. But we encourage people to stand up and give some kind of testimony before the congregation. We invite all of them to come to all of the services that are around Easter time. So each of the candidates is, and we anticipate in our parish, we do Holy Thursday, I have Good Friday, and then of course the Easter Vigil on Saturday. So we say, please come during Holy Week for worship. We also do evening Vespers every day during Holy Week, for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and we encourage them to come too, but we more emphasize Holy Thursday or Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday, that they would participate in that. And then comes the baptism on Easter Vigil. In our church, Easter Vigil takes 2 hours and 25 minutes usually. So we start at 10 o'clock at night, and we finish, usually are celebrating the Eucharist at midnight. And Easter Vigil is a fun time in our church. I mean, like, it's sort of like, let it all hang out, use the best music you can, make a lot of noise at the announcement of the resurrection. But it's also one of the most solemn times of the church, as people come forward and affirm their faith. And like in the film last night, each candidate has to say all of the creed for each candidate.